Thank you. I'm Chuck C., and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Good-looking bunch. If we hadn't had that Calistoga bunch down here, we'd have had a little more time. Hello there. I want you to take note that it's 20 minutes after the hour right now, and I'm going to quit on time. Yes, I am. So I'm not going to tell you very much tonight. I already got a dinner out of the deal, so I can't lose. I got my own rabbi here in this place, so I'm not losing on that either. I'm glad to be here. I want to tell you right off the bat that 23 years ago, I wouldn't have given you a plugged nickel for your fearless leader. He didn't even have a prayer, that guy. No front teeth. No home. Back end of an abandoned automobile. Dirty, stinking. And if we weren't in a synagogue, I would just say right out that he was an egotistical son of a bitch. But I can't say that here, so I won't. Didn't have a chance, not even to get sober, let alone to head up the biggest weekly meeting in the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's this one. This is the biggest weekly meeting in the world. And the man's doing it after 23 short years. And I tell you, I don't believe that I have known anybody in the last 23 years that has improved more than your fearless leader. But of course, I don't know anybody that needed improvement anymore. Oh, me. Tell you a little story. A number of years back is when we had Sandy Koufax pitching for the Dodgers. We were in the World Series for a little while. And Clancy and Luann Sims brought me down two tickets to see Sandy Koufax pitch in the World Series. Clear across town. My plant was at 40th and Alameda in Los Angeles. And they came clear across town and brought me two tickets to watch Sandy pitch. And when they had given me the tickets, Clancy said, "I want to ask you to be my sponsor." Well, I wasn't going to give him back the tickets. So, I said, "Well, Clancy, I'll give you anything I got, but I won't think of you as my baby. I don't have babies in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't want to get the feeling that I've had anything to do with somebody else's sobriety when I couldn't get sober myself. So I told him, I'll give you anything I've got, but I won't think of you as my baby. You can call me a sponsor if you want to, but I won't be taking any credit for what you do in this great fellowship. And I haven't. Presently, I'd like to. I'd like to put in the Sunday paper that I sponsor the guy that has the biggest group in the world. Weekly meet. But now it's too late now. I never had a sponsor myself, because when I got here, I didn't know anything at all about a sponsor. Never heard about a sponsor. I didn't know anything about alcoholism. I knew a lot about the inside of jails. I knew a lot about DTs. I knew a lot about convulsions. I knew a lot about very messy beds and things of that kind, but I knew nothing about alcoholism. I was out of good drinking time before Alcoholics Anonymous was born. Alcoholics Anonymous was 46 years old, the 10th day of last June. I'm coming up now for 36 years without a drink or pill. And I was 11 years a periodic before I got here. I became a periodic because I wasn't going to lose to a bottle. And you can't put up a very good fight when you're down on your back. So I became periodic. So I was out of good drinking time before Alcoholics Anonymous was born. And when I got to my first meeting, I knew nothing of a sponsor. And when I found out about a sponsor and might have asked somebody to be my sponsor, I didn't need one. I already had 500 and a God of my very own. So I never had a sponsor. But today, I figure that the entire human race is my sponsor. Some of them teaching me what to do, and some of them teaching me what not to do. And I figure the ones that teach me what not to do are just as good as the ones that teach me what to do. So the whole human race is my sponsor. But I never had a sponsor in my life. As a matter of fact, just for the fun of it, I never made a mistake in my first 43 years of life. I never made a mistake. I always had somebody to blame for everything that happened to me. I never even had a drunk that was my fault. And the whole time I drank, it was your fault. It was my wife's fault. It was her mother's fault. Now there was a king-size reason for getting bad drunk. She only had one kid, and I was married to her. She was living with us. And she had a grandstand seat watching me crucify her only daughter. She didn't like me very good. And I didn't like her that good. We had a mutual hating society that was a beautiful thing to behold. She lived with us for 5 years after I got sober. And I'd like to take all the time I have tonight telling you what this program did for her. sure fixed her up. But I never made a mistake in the first 43 years. All the catastrophes were the fault of the system. All my personal problems were the fault of my friends and my enemies. So I always had somebody to blame. After running out of time, I mean running out of time, which I did in January 1946, I went to the well the last time, early January 1946. As a matter of fact, it was the last of December 45 when I went down to the office, feeling pretty good because Christmas was coming right up. It was Friday before Christmas, 1945. Christmas was coming up and New Year's was coming up. So that was a little good drinking time. I could even do a little bit more drinking around home at that time of the year than any other time. So I was feeling pretty good till I got to the office. And I got to the office and there was a note for me to see the boss. And I didn't want to see the boss. I knew what he looked like. And I knew what he was going to do. He was going to can me. Because I knew I had it coming. And he was messing up my life again. So I didn't want to see him, but I had to. So I went in to see him. And instead of shooting me, as he had every right to do, he started talking. And this is about what he said to me. He says, Charlie, I was Charlie in business. He says, you've had a lot of trouble this year. Didn't mention booze. But he knew that I knew what he was talking about when he said trouble. And he was a non-alcoholic. So he had it all figured out. He says, I think that I know your problem. I think it's because of the pressure you're under. He's a non-alcoholic, you see. And he says, I've decided to take a little of the pressure off of you. So instead of shooting me, as he had every right to do, he gave me $3,000 for a Christmas present. The Friday before Christmas, 1945. To take the pressure off of me. Now, if you don't think he took the pressure off me, you're nuts. There's one thing that's worse for an alcoholic than bad fortune, and that's good fortune. So I got drunk on the way home. I remember nothing from the Friday before Christmas, 45, till after the middle of January, 46. If I could remember any part of it, I'm pretty sure I'm smart enough to figure out a way to take credit for the last 35 years of my life. But I can't even remember the first drink, or a middle drink, or the last one. My good wife, sitting right down here, she tells me that during that whole period, I emptied 7 quarts of whiskey every 3 days. Now, I don't say that. She says it. And I can't even argue with her because I wasn't there. She was. So, I don't know. And not even being able to say, well, I drank the whiskey, didn't I? I can't even say that because I don't know it. She says I did. And I can't argue with her. So I can't justify taking credit for my last 35 years. 35 years and 8 months I haven't had to have a drink or pill. Because during that period of time, everything between me and me burned out. My excuses all burned out, and my I wants burned out. All of them. And when I came to, I had only one thing in mind. I didn't want to die with a record. All through my drinking career, I never got to the point I didn't love my wife and my kids. And I loved them when I came to that morning. And I didn't want them to remember me as nothing but a tongue-chewing, babbling idiot drunk. And fortunately for me, that morning, for the first time in 5 years, I remembered that I'd read Jack Alexander's article in the Post. Came out the 1st of March, 1941, Saturday Evening Post. First big piece that was ever written about us, Alcoholics Anonymous. Mrs. C. had found it, read it, decided it would be good for me if I would read it, and had put it on the left arm of the chair that I sit in right now, open at the right page. And evidently I read it, but I never remembered it until the morning I came to. And I remembered that I'd read the article, only remembered two things about it. That drunks helped drunks and didn't drink. And they called it Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said to myself, if I ever live to get out of this bed, I'll find AA. And immediately, the curtain dropped. My little period of sanity was gone. And I was sick to death, drunk and insane. And I had a lot of dying to do before I started getting well. But from the very second, I said to myself, if I ever live to get out of this bed, I'll find AA until right now. I've never had a drink of liquor or a sedating or tranquilizing pill of any kind. Such is the great significance of this thing called surrender. Surrender! Surrender's victory for the alcoholic. Surrender. As far as I'm concerned, probably the greatest line in our book is, we cease to fight anything or anybody. We give up the fight and win. Not only have I not had a drink or a sedating or tranquilizing pill, for 35 years and 8 months, I've never had one conscious desire for one, which I am more grateful for than the fact that I haven't had one. Because had I had a conscious desire for a drink, I'd have gotten drunk, I think. Because I always did. But I came to my first meeting by myself, alone. Nobody brought me. I got the name of a guy from a doctor in Beverly Hills who was a member of this leper colony. And I called him and we talked. And after we talked a while, he said he'd be had a drink today. And I said, no. Well, he said, don't take one. He says, I have to work tonight, so I can't take you to meeting. But maybe tomorrow I won't have to work. He was a motion picture actor, incidentally. And he says, call me tomorrow. Maybe I won't be working tomorrow night, and I'll take you to meeting. So I called him tomorrow. We talked a little while, and He says, "We had a drink today." I said, "No." He says, "Don't take one. I'm still working." "Call me tomorrow." So I called him the third day. And we talked a little bit, and this time I said, "I know you're still working." And he says, "Yes." I says, "You don't need to take me to meeting. Where's your meeting I can go to?" And he told me, and it was within 5 minutes of my house. So I decided to go. And I felt pretty good about it until about 10 minutes before time to start. And then I started to think. Now, I came here to tell you two things tonight, besides to tell you that I think you got a pretty good leader. And I'm glad he's got 23 years in the program. But the first thing I want to tell you is quit thinking. Just quit. Thinking's bad for a drunk. That's why we're here. You know, thinking. So quit thinking. We can live ourselves into right thinking, but we cannot think ourselves into right living. That's number one. Number two, I came to tell you I love you. I love you. You don't have to change anything you're doing for me to love you. If you're drunk, you don't even have to get sober for me to love you. If you're a thief, you don't have to quit thiefing. If you're a liar, you don't have to quit lying. You don't have to quit anything for me to love you, because I know who you are, whether you do or not. So I love you. Now I got those two out of the way. I got to thinking, and here's what my keen alcoholic mind told me. He says, "Wait a minute, big boy. You've been living in Beverly Hills a long time. And it might not be advisable for you to be seen with a bunch of drunks." You'll never know how funny that is. Because the only person that had spent more time in the Beverly Hills jail than me was the jailer. And yeah, I'm concerned about being seen with a bunch of drunks. But I talked myself out of it. I said, "I'll disguise myself a bit. And go anyway. So I won't be immediately identifiable." Which I did, and I went. And the meeting was in the Veterans of Foreign Wars Hall in Beverly Hills. Great big hall. Door right in the middle of the back wall to the outside. And I came up to that door and looked in. There were about 35 people there. Mind you, this is 35 years and 8 months ago. And there weren't many people on the West Coast in Alcoholics Anonymous at that time. Very few. So there were 35 people in the middle of that great big hall. And I stood in the door and looked at them a bit. And it didn't take me very long to come to the conclusion that they'd given me the wrong night. Because you didn't look like me. And you weren't dressed like me, and you most certainly weren't talking like me, because every one of you were talking and nobody listening. It's been that way ever since. And I couldn't understand the word, but I knew it was happy talk. I could tell that from the sounds that I got. So I knew very well that you weren't alcoholics, or you wouldn't have been that happy. So I said to myself, "They've given me the wrong information. This is the wrong night. These are the veterans and their wives, and they're here for a party. And I'm going to have to leave and come back the night the drunks are here." And I turned to leave, as near dead as I'll ever be. Because at long last I'd come and it was the wrong night. And now this next minute is the essence of our program as far as I'm concerned. Somebody in the middle of that little group had been watching me. And when I turned to leave, he came running over to the door. And he called after me. He said, "Mister, were you looking for somebody?" And I said, "No, sir." Well, he says, "What were you looking for then?" And thinking he was a veteran, I said, "Well, if it would interest you, sir, I was looking for sobriety." And everything about that man changed. Instantly. It was just like you turned on a light switch. He lit up all over. And it was obvious to me that he was glad I was there. And I was hooked before he ever opened his mouth again. Here's a man I'd never seen in my entire lifetime. And he was so glad I was there, he lit up like a Christmas tree. When my own family, my own flesh and blood, wouldn't even spit on me. So I was hooked before he ever spoke again. And when he did, this is what he said. "Why, take off your hat and coat, you're in the right place." And he took me and knocked me to sleep. That's 35 years and 8 months ago. And I've been coming back ever since. And I'll be coming back until you pat me in the face with a scoop. Because I love this program and I love its people. This is the most fantastic society that I have ever had anything to do with. I think that our formula is the finest formula that was ever conceived in the mind of man through the grace of God for obtaining and maintaining sobriety. And it has two other facets that are equally marvelous. It's the best formula for the good life and for self-discovery that I have ever seen. It's fantastic. Alcoholics Anonymous to me is nothing in the world but uncover, discover, and discard. Uncover, discover, and discard. That's our program. And I say the finest program that was ever conceived to mind a man through the grace of God, because I know the guy, knew him very well, who wrote the fifth chapter, our beloved Bill. I got acquainted with him in 1953 when you people sent me to New York as your second delegate to the General Service Conference. And I was there in 53 and 54. And when the conference was over in 54, Bill found me, and he said, "Chuck," he says, "you've been back here 2 years now, and you've never taken 5 seconds of my time, and I think I know why." And he says, "It's time that we were getting acquainted with each other, and I'm going to come out and see you." Now, he lived in Bedford Hills, a suburb of New York City. And I live in Beverly Hills, clear across the continent. And you can knock me down with a feather. Here's the head man telling me, a neophyte, that he was going to come and see me. And when I could talk, I said, "Bill, if you mean it, we'd be glad to have you. We got room for you. And we'd be glad to see you out there." And this was in April 1954. And in June 54, he was in our house. And for 3 days, we never opened the front door. We just yak. 1971, we spent a lot of time together. And the reason I say the best program that was ever conceived in the mind of man through the grace of God was his little story about trying to get started on chapter 5 of the big book. And he said he was totally void. He didn't have anything in his head at all to put down. But he had to write. And there were two reasons for that. I suspect that the idea of the big book in the first place was to help drunks. But as it went along, they got another idea. They figured that if they wrote a book, it might sell pretty good, and they could make a little money out of it. And at that time, at the time they were talking about the book, there was just about one of them working, and that's all. And that was Bill's wife, Lois. And she was working in Macy's basement. And one of the things they wanted to do with this book was to make enough money to get her out of Macy's basement so they could eat regular and also to help drunks. So, he sat down to write and was totally void. But he had to write. And he started writing. And in 30 minutes, he had the 12 steps. As they are now, they haven't been changed in essence since he put them down. There's been a word or two changed. But the meaning of the 12 steps have never been changed since he first put them down on paper. And so out of that, I came to believe that there are two kinds of depressions, maybe more, but two anyway. One of them is the depression of the ego, which is poor me. And most of us know about that, and Bill certainly did. He had one depression that lasted 10 years that was of that nature. The other is the depression of the spirit. The depression of the spirit. And that means that we are void. And when we're void, we are open to the infinite intelligence that's around us. The carpenter man, you know, said, "In him we live and move and have our being." And that's the way it is. And when we feel inadequate, and it isn't a depression of the ego, but of the spirit, we're liable to get it right from where it comes from. And I think that's where our 12 steps came from. Right out of the infinite intelligence, which is God. And I think it's the finest formula that was ever conceived in the mind of man through the grace of God for obtaining and maintaining sobriety and also for the good life and self-discovery, which our program is. The discovery of the self by the self. And of course, it is totally tied up with surrender. Surrender! I've come to believe that the only roadblock between me and you and me and my very own God is the human ego. And it has to go to the boards. It has to go to the boards. Because it's conscious separation. Me against you, me against the world, me against God. Conscious separation from. I walked alone for 43 years. And after my sixth year with you people, I discovered that I had a God of my very own. And wherever I am, He is. And I've never been alone since. It's a fantastic thing. And everything that I beat my brains out to get and ended up without in the first 43 years of my life has come into my life since I came to you. And I never tried to get any of it. Many of you know my story. Since I quit trying to get anything, I got rich. Since I quit trying to go anyplace, I've been all over the world. Since I quit running my life and my wife's life and our kids' life, we've become a family. And it's pretty fabulous. I highly recommend it. Don't sell it short. Of course, there's sobriety here. There's sobriety here, sure. And that's worth the price of admission. If that's all it was. But there's also the spirit of this thing that is ours, which is the Spirit of God. There's also the peace and the joy that comes with the motivation of love. I'm convinced that the only motivation for any act whatsoever that's worth its salt in this life is L-O-V-E, love. And the wonder of wonders is that if we pour nothing but love into life, life can give us back nothing but love, because we reap what we sow. The great law of justice without judgment. We reap what we sow. We pour in slop, we get back slop. We pour in love, we get back love. Again, don't be afraid of it. I wouldn't trade it for anything I've ever heard about, read about, dreamed about, or seen. And I'm getting up in years. My next birthday is 80. Woo-hoo! What do you think of them apples? And the last year of life's been the best. And I think by next 30 are going to be better than those. God bless you. Thank you very much.